Today is officially the last day of service for the European Union's first foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton.
The latter part of her five-year term has arguably been the more challenging, with crises in Ukraine, the Middle East, and talks over Iran's nuclear future, which are actually extending her duties. She has pledged to see out those negotiations.
In a moment, we'll hear the thoughts of the diplomatic editor of The Times, that's Roger Boys. But first, let's hear how Catherine Ashton's been seen in Brussels and what she'll be remembered for. This is Monocle's Brussels correspondent, Charlotte MacDonald-Gibson.
Whoever it was who got that position as the first head of the European External Action Service in 2009, they were never going to have an easy ride. This was a new foreign affairs post in a bloc where an awful lot of the member states were deeply suspicious of having an EU foreign service and quite unwilling to sacrifice their own foreign policy clout and their own national interests overseas. But when Baroness Ashton was named to the post, she came in for particular criticism, at first over her utter lack of foreign policy experience. The criticism at times became quite personal and arguably sexist, with the French media even commenting on the way she dressed. In many ways, that set the combative tone with the press for her whole tenure. She very rarely gave any interviews and is very guarded at press conferences and only answers a few questions. So the feeling in Brussels is that she generally has not been very good at communicating what the EAS has been doing. And I think it's fair to say that the press corps here won't miss her very much at all. There have also been some quite critical reports by auditors in the European Parliament, who summarised in a report last year that the EEAS was top-heavy and encumbered in its decision-making by layers of bureaucracy. So it definitely was a very shaky start for Baroness Ashton. But over the last year, I would say there has been some sea change in opinion in her brand of diplomacy, with some notable foreign policy successes. Her determination resulted last year in a once unthinkable political deal between Kosovo and Serbia. We had a similar breakthrough last November when she helped broker a deal aimed at curbing Iran's nuclear ambitions. This earned her plaudits from people like British Foreign Secretary William Hague and US Secretary of State John Kerry. Even Britain's Telegraph newspaper, not a natural ally of hers, ran a blog entitled, "We Were All Wrong About Baroness Ashton." So the verdict is definitely mixed. She won few friends in Brussels with her guarded approach, but there was finally some grudging acknowledgement that perhaps she was better behind closed doors.
Our Brussels correspondent, Charlotte MacDonald-Gibson there. Next, Monocle's Belgrade correspondent, Guy Delaney, gives his view from the Balkans.
Well, Serbia is at least one place where Catherine Ashton seems to be held in high esteem, certainly in official circles. Foreign Minister Ivica Dacic called her the only objective mediator in the Western Balkans crises, adding that he should know, as he'd personally witnessed all the turmoil of the past 25 years. That's true. He was the spokesman for the notorious President Slobodan Milosevic in the 1990s. If you talk to European diplomats, they'll tell you about Ashton's determination to broker an agreement between Serbia and Kosovo. Foreign ministers like to be remembered for this kind of thing, and as, in effect, the first foreign minister of the European Union, it would have been little short of a disaster for Ashton to leave office without some sort of signature deal. It's entirely possible that she identified Serbia-Kosovo relations as an easy hit. Belgrade wanted to start EU membership talks, and many Serbian people, perhaps the majority, had grown to view Kosovo as a millstone rather than the spiritual heartland of the nation. Funding so-called parallel institutions for North Kosovo's Serbs had certainly become a financial pain. So all Ashton had to do was find a formula that would be palatable to both Serbia and the breakaway government in Pristina. She chaired the talks between the two prime ministers, and it took a mere 10 meetings before agreement was reached. Serbia would not recognise Kosovo's independence, but it did agree to normalise relations and help to place Kosovo's ethnic Serb population under the auspices of the authorities in Pristina. Only a handful of right-wing ultranationalists protested in Belgrade. The rest of the Serbian population seemed to breathe a sigh of relief that the issue was finally settled. There was even a flurry of stories in the local press suggesting that Ashton might be up for the Nobel Peace Prize, along with the two prime ministers. You'll still find plenty of people in Serbia who'll argue that the country should be forging closer ties with Russia rather than dealing with the EU, but even President Tomislav Nikolic, who's usually characterised as a friend of Moscow, seems to have got on with Ashton. She certainly sent him a warm farewell letter, which said, "I strongly believe that thanks to your political courage and statesmanship, the Western Balkans region is a better place today. The EU will remain your close partner in this and other undertakings." And it seems, broadly speaking, the feeling is mutual. For Monocle in Belgrade, I'm Guy Delorne.
Well, the diplomatic editor of the Times newspaper, Roger Boys, joins us now to share his thoughts with us. Welcome to The Globalist, Roger. When you hear that, list of achievements, I wonder, that deal done in the Balkans, where does that stand for you in the rankings?
Well, it was a rather short list of achievements, if I might say, it's normalisation, and it's based on a premise that this European foreign policy, as it emerges, and it's taken quite a while to emerge, has to be based on a carrot and stick thing. And the problem is that the EU doesn't have a stick, apart from sanctions, which it's often very reluctant to enforce, and structurally unable to enforce sometimes because European foreign policy is a consensus policy. Let's say you have to get the agreement of 28 countries. That's the stick, and then there's the carrot. And the carrot that was offered to Serbia was accelerated entry to the European Union, or at least alignment with the European Union. And the carrot that was offered to Kosovo was accelerated prestige leading to universal acceptance that it has an independent statehood. Well, that's all well and good, but it isn't happening. There are still tensions in northern Kosovo, and we have a snapshot of a more peaceful little oasis now in the Balkans, but it's not going to last very long. I think it's going to be a temporary success because, on the whole, the European Union can't really deliver. We've seen that with Ukraine, for example, that the European Union offers things, it sort of lays out its stall, but when you look at it closer, it turns out to be a rhetorical promise rather than a real promise of Ukraine joining anything approaching proper European Union membership.
Let's have a look at Catherine Ashton, the woman, and her career, because she came out of nowhere, really, didn't she, to take this position?
Well, she didn't come out of nowhere. She came out of the Labour Party. You might say that's the same thing, of course. I've never held her inexperience against her. Quite a lot of people who later become successful foreign secretaries come from almost nowhere. The main thing is to have really good expert advice around you, and she did. She had someone called Robert Cooper, who was one of the big brains of the Foreign Office and of international diplomacy. So that worked. I mean, her main problem was not personal. I mean, she's very understated in an Angela Merkel kind of way, which was the right personality, because it was a consensus-based thing. She couldn't have her own foreign policy. She couldn't lead foreign policy. She had to gather in the sheep like a shepherdess. And when you're dealing with 28 countries, that's really difficult. So I think she was unfairly knocked at the beginning. And her main achievement was really building an institution, and from nowhere and from nothing, and against heavy resistance, including from Britain, which really didn't want to see a strong, independent European foreign policy. So that was her problem, and she was always underrated, just as Angela Merkel has always been underrated, right from the beginning. But the truth is, when you look at what she's achieved, the balance sheet, it's not all that good.
And is that more to do with the fact that she was building a department as opposed to, and even trying to get that consensus between 28 member states that you talked about, rather than the woman herself?
Yes. It slowed her down. You know, she had to build up embassies. She had to build up the whole idea of a European foreign policy and to separate herself somehow from the Commission.
So having laid the groundwork for the External Action Service, I wonder where you think it goes with her successor now.
Well, it has to go. I must say that Catherine Ashton was helped by the relative weakness of the Obama administration. It was easier to bring the Obama team into some kind of conciliatory soft power combination on different things. So she was quite helped by that. So the successor will also be able to play on this for a while. I'm a bit worried about the successor. I think that this whole balance of carrot and stick is going to be really complicated in the Middle East. She's going, Ms. Mogherini is going to Jerusalem very soon, and it's going to be a problem there, you know, because she thinks that she can offer a strategic partnership with Israel and the Palestinian territories in return for Israel accepting some kind of general European acceptance of the state of Palestine. Well, that's not going to work. It's not going to work with Israel, and it shouldn't work with Israel because it's the wrong way forward. And I think these very, very complex issues need a certain personality to sell, to champion, and to, you know, to create a certain dynamic. And I don't think necessarily that she's shown that she's got that.